Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. So come and get away where everybody knows your name. And we're always glad you came.
Momentum.
Hey, Mom. Sorry it's been so long since I last spoke or wrote to you. I've gone through so much since you had to leave. I don't know if it made me tough, but I know it helped me see. I guess you could say I've come a long way, because who I am today is definitely different than who I was. For a while, I was lost, but I'm starting to feel better. Whether it's growth or acceptance, I'm not really sure, but really, what's the difference? Still, Mom, I really, really miss you. And it's an issue, because sometimes I can barely stand on my own two feet, but I'm getting stronger. I no longer want to die, and I barely ever even cry. And the harder I try, the easier it becomes. Momentum. Moving forward, the harder it rains, the happier you are to see the sun. One thing I've learned is it's harder to run from your problems than to solve them. And I was dissolving in my sorrow, like the sugar I used to mix into your tea, but less sweet, you know? So now I turn to depression, into creation, and write these poems knowing no one will probably ever read them, but it helps. The emotion that I feel can be overwhelming. So I write. And when I get it all down on paper, I usually feel all right. I don't feel the need to medicate like I used to, when these wounds were more new. So maybe you'd be proud if you saw who I was compared to who I am now. I know who I am again, and some things I want to be. A better father and brother, the man you raised me to be. I'll never forget you or the things that you've done, but I'm done letting this ruin everything, letting everything fall apart and shatter on the ground like the mirror that had become my life. And I'm pulling myself back up, and I'm putting myself back together. I'll make myself be enough, and I'll better myself for forever. Mom, you're on my mind almost every single day, and you finally helped me see the path, and you helped me find my way. Momentum. What's up, guys? This is Recover Together, and I'm Lip. Usually, I have my co-host, Michael Orlando, here, but he's out with family today, so me and the Titan Phoebes are going to carry on. Hopefully, we can fill his very large shoes. We're going to try. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Phoebes. He's got something to say to y'all.
Hey, good afternoon, HHR community. It's good to be here with you. Big shout out to Michael Orlando. No, we can't fill your shoes, but we'll definitely do our best. Yeah, so today on Recover Together podcast, we're going to get into a really, I think, hard topic, which is why it's worth getting into, which is about community support and child custody for especially folks who are navigating coming home from incarceration. But I think it can apply to lots of different contexts. The need to be aware of how the child support system works, the barriers that that can create, and the reality that people, I think for the most part, are trying to be in healthy and supportive relationship to their family and their community. And at the end of the day, we need to find ways to create that with each other. And so that's what we're going to explore on the show today. Some real experiences around those challenges and some of the kind of bigger picture around what people are grappling with in that area. And then just some ideas, some, from our own lived experiences, from the voices of other folks, for how to anchor in a healthy way to finding the community support you need around you. So with that, I'm gonna kick it back over to Lip to kick us off on this topic with his thought of the week.
Alrighty, guys. This is what I've been thinking about this week. I've been knocking it back and forth in my head, and this is what I came up with, trying to tie support networks and family and child custody all together. A lot of people in recovery or recently released from incarceration don't have very solid support networks in place. This could prove to be catastrophic. The less support we have available, the more likely we are to reoffend, and the less likely those of us with children will be able to establish custody or even a meaningful role in their lives. While custody alone could be a barrier, a solid support network can help with legal issues or even a lawyer or investigative assistance. Either way, it's important that we realize we're not alone, and if we build and utilize a support network, we can accomplish anything. So, I mean, with that, that's where I'm at on the subject. You know, I see that when I came home, the support I had in place isn't exactly what everybody else does. I kind of put a lot of extra work into it, and I feel like it's one of the most important things people in recovery or coming out of incarceration should do, and that's building a support network that's able to provide you with the resources you need to succeed. Me personally, I built a support network based off of a few people, and that opened up so many opportunities. I'm taking voluntary parenting classes. I got into an outpatient drug class that I am constantly learning from, and I also have been getting assistance with being able to regain some custody with my child. So I mean, that's kind of a big thing with people, though. Like, they don't utilize the support networks that are really right in front of them. They just have to put it together. You know what I mean, Phoebes?
Yeah, I hear that very much so. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that. But one of the things I'm curious about, because there's kind of, to me, there's the structured support systems like you're describing, your parenting classes, your outpatient classes. But then there's also the more informal support system. Like, who's the person who's actually checking in with you when you're having a really tough day and reminding you, don't give up on that parenting class, or making sure you have a soft bed to sleep on so you can actually have the mental capacity to go to your drug. So I'm curious for you where you found a balance between using the formal systems to do your own work, but then also how do other just people in your life make that possible?
You see, a really, for me at least, a really big part of that was my family, my sister Justine, her husband John. They were my anchors. They still are my anchors. I shouldn't say where. They motivate me constantly. They're like telling me, oh, if you keep doing what you're doing, you keep going with what you're going, not only are you going to be able to be successful and maybe help all these people, but you'll be able to have Zoe back in your life. And Zoe's my daughter. She's an amazing little girl. And I tied that in with all of these professional things, as Phoebes was talking about, with the reentry system that we have in Columbia County. It's the director of the program, Lori Scott, is a huge motivator for me, and she's the one who actually made this radio show possible. So I relied on the two of them, well, really the three of them, but those two support nodes in my network pretty heavily when I first came home. And still, even now, I rely on them quite a bit. But being able to establish people who are going to motivate you and not bring you down is definitely really important. Like Phoebes was just saying, my best advice would be to find somebody that you can really trust. For me, that was my sister. It could be your friend. It could be somebody you've known your entire life. It could be somebody you just met, but somebody that you can really trust and you know wants to help you better yourself so you could be better for everyone else.
That's really, yeah, it's really insightful. And, you know, there's a few things that stick out for me as you're talking that seem relevant to whether or not people are doing the sort of things you're doing. So one, like you said, you know, just having an anchor person, but it's not just about, like, you know, being thoughtful about who you're trying to call in as that anchor person or support. Is this somebody who's going to actually encourage you to do your own work to keep getting ahead in life instead of, you know, overly coddling or letting you slip back into old habits?
Or so enabling. Yeah, you're right.
Right. Enablers, right? So knowing the difference between a motivator and an enabler seems like an important part for people thinking about who their anchor supports are.
And, you know, that's really hard. That's really hard to figure out. It's just, it's something that it takes a lot of like looking into, because enablers and motivators, there's a very thin line.
Yeah. And to me, the thing to look for is this person actually, is this somebody I actually feel like I can trust naming what my goals and dreams are for myself and that they actually hold me accountable to that, right? And I think it's human nature sometimes to not want to hold people accountable to their goals because sometimes that's a hard conversation,
Right.
you know? But those end up being some of the most important people in your life are the ones who are willing to have a hard conversation with you.
Absolutely.
And it's because they care. And I think so the other thing that you talked about that seemed really important to me is hope. That you actually have some hope built in with Zoe about the what's going to happen if you follow through. And I think, you know, it's I'm so grateful that you're in an active conversation with people that's a possibility. I think about folks who maybe aren't at that stage yet, that maybe feel like it's a hopeless thing to recover, you know, their
Yep.
custody or and I'm curious if you have any words or thoughts for those people who maybe are a little drained on hope, but still deserve to feel like it's worth moving ahead for their own well-being.
I think the hopelessness is actually like a phase we all go through as we're establishing ourselves, being ready to recover, whether it be from incarceration, addiction, or anything. Because I can definitely relate to being hopeless at one point and saying, "Hey, what's the point? Maybe they'll be better off without me." That's really kind of a thing that it's. I think it's a different battle for everyone. But once you come around to realizing that you, as you are, you really are a better person for their life. You're going to enhance their life, their existence, and everything. So getting past the hopelessness, it might be hard, but it's. Once we finally do, it definitely opens our eyes to more options than even just enhancing their life. Like for me, this originally all was about me becoming a better father, being able to be a more like solid role in my daughter's life. And then it turned into me wanting to help people, and it eventually led me to the path that I'm on now. And it really does all start with getting over that hopelessness. And that's just the key to that, for me at least, was just a lot of hard thought and being truthful and honest with yourself entirely.
Oh, that's deep. That's really powerful, and just, you know, it's so important to hold that as real, that like everyone will dip into periods of hopelessness at points in time. You know, and I know for myself when I slip into negative patterns around hopelessness, it's usually because I'm hung up on something I feel like I've lost, something from the past, instead of trusting that if I continue my own journey of being the best man I can be every day, that those things can recreate themselves in our lives. You know,
Absolutely.
I think sometimes it can feel like we lost a moment and it'll never come back again. Instead of saying that specific version of my dream will never come back again because life doesn't work that way. But life sure has a way of bringing our dreams back around in unexpected ways if we stay the course, you
I could
know?
not have said that better myself, Phoebes. That was beautiful because things really do come back, and they come back better. It's just being. It's committing to applying yourself.
Well, maybe we can let Arlo Parks come in, and this song that we pick, you know, has a refrain in it that I think is all about hope, which is acknowledging that things will hurt, but they won't hurt forever, and they certainly won't hurt the way they hurt right now forever. So let's give that a listen, yeah?
All righty. We'll catch you on the other side of this track.
Something, huh? Stuck on the new J. Paul. Said my clothes are sticking to me and I can't quite see my walls. Started dreaming of a house with red carnations by the windows where he didn't feel so small, so overwhelmed by all his flaws. I know you can't let go of anything at the moment. Just know it won't hurt so much forever. Forever won't hurt so much. Won't hurt so much forever. Won't hurt so much. Won't hurt so much. I know you can't let go of anything at the moment. Just know it won't hurt so. Won't hurt so much forever. So much.
That is an absolutely beautiful song, and it ties in so well to what we're talking about. The hopelessness mm-hmm. will not last forever. And I just want to take a second real quick to give a little shout out to Eleanor Kinney and Kinney's Cakes, a new business that popped up in Hudson. She is single-handedly saving my niece's birthday party this weekend, so I just wanted to let everybody know that she is an amazing resource if you need any cakes, cupcakes, anything personalized. Her phone number is 518-653-8994. And again, that's Kinney's Cakes in Hudson. So, Phoebes, I just wanted to, before I read another poem, I wanted to talk a little bit about building these support networks and after we've built them, using them to, like, actually help ourselves. Because at the end of the day, if we don't have people to stand with, we're standing alone, and it's a lot harder to knock down a group of people than it is to knock down one person, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we could look at all the things that a good support network could actually do for you. You know, they could help you find a lawyer to go to family court with. They could help you improve on yourself before even taking the step to go to family court. And that's the difficult thing, though. It's right. It's finding these people. So what I plan on doing with HHR, which is my organization that I believe a lot of our followers know about, Helping Hands Recovery, I want to help people be able to find and utilize these support networks. Phoebes, do you have anything to say about utilizing support networks through a person's like view of not having an addiction or whatever?
Yeah, I've got thoughts about it. So Yeah, I mean, I honestly feel like the creating strong, healthy community support systems is the antidote to so much suffering in the world, whether that is grappling through addiction, whether that is, returning home from incarceration, but also just like everyday survival. Capitalism sort of creates this paradigm that is very individualized, right? It's
Absolutely.
like everybody should pull themselves up by their bootstraps and have it together and take care of themselves or take care of their tiny family unit, right? And even it even gets looked down on sometimes if you use mutual aid, like people who choose to live in intergenerational households with their parents and continue that get looked down on like they didn't make it themselves. And it's a really silly way to look at the world because I think the more we can lean into the abundance of support that's available in the world, the less we have to struggle individually. So I think this conversation really does apply to anybody, but it's especially important for anybody who's in a vulnerable position. I mean, the number of potential hurdles for a person coming home from, inpatient treatment or for incarceration are almost mind-boggling. The state of Florida has 4,000 laws on the books that tell people with felony records what they can and cannot do. 4,000. I mean, it's incredible, right? And so when you think about the level of complex navigation that folks have to do, on top of, just imagine yourself, taken out of just practicing what it looks like to move through space and communities and people for a year or 3 years or 5 years or 20 years, and what that brings in terms of stress and anxiety and a learning curve and adjustment coming back into that. So I think it requires a lot of grace and a lot of compassion. It requires folks to understand that a lot of the people we see struggling aren't just struggling because they don't have themselves together, but they're struggling because the odds are stacked against them.
Yes,
And when I think
absolutely.
about the future of an organization like Helping Hands Recovery, it's about making it easier for us to even know where and how to find the supports that exist in the world. And just your shout out just earlier is a beautiful example of what I call mutual aid, right? Which is you had a need and you went and connected with is it
Kenny's
Kinney's
cakes.
Cakes?
Kenny's
Yep.
cakes.
And y'all came up with a barter kind of agreement on how to make it work, right? Like she was willing to meet you where you were at. She knows what she has available, you know what you have available, y'all figured out a way to make it work, right? And that's so different than my cakes are $40. End of
Yeah.
conversation.
Absolutely.
And I think every person who has resources has the power to make a choice to offer that kind of support in a different kind of exchange than the typical capitalist exchange in moments like that. And I also think a lot of times we don't feel like we, on the other side of it, is we don't necessarily feel like we have anything to offer people. It feels too overwhelming to help out with a person all of a person's problems. But it's like just take a minute, take a deep breath, think about your life, and just consider where there's abundance, right? Like where is there extra resource in your life that's feeding you and that you feel like you could share some? And then also sit with the question of where is there scarcity in your life where you aren't fully fed yet, that maybe somebody else has abundance in that category that they can feed you. But it's never, anytime you're in an exchange that feels like it's only one-sided, that's not going to last long. It's not going to be sustainable, right? So I think the huge part of the mentality of mutual aid is recognizing that we are in a giving and receiving relationship. There's mutuality. It's called mutual aid, right?
Absolutely.
And it doesn't tell, and there is not a single person in a mutual aid paradigm who doesn't have something to offer, whether that is a ride to a court date or
A
a
little
willingness to,
advice.
literally willing to pick up the phone and call a person and say, hey, this is your 9 a.m. reminder. Don't miss it. Like, I'm really, really proud of you, right? Like that doesn't take a lot. You don't need to be rich. You don't need to even have like your own all your stuff together. These little ways. Food. You just hit the food bank and you just got like a great haul and you got more pasta than you know what to do with. Call somebody up and be like, "Hey, any chance you need some extra pasta?"
Right?
And oh, you don't? Who else do you know who could use it? Just those little steps and that sort of energy, I think it feeds itself, right? Because it feeds a primal part of us that used to be tribes of people caring for each other, like wolf packs, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
And we've lost that primal instinct, but it's still deep inside of us. So I think when we start to turn it on and practice it, it becomes pretty natural.
It becomes integral to recovery. What you just said was beautiful, Phoebes. It really, that's for me, that was a huge part of committing to recovery, realizing that I had something to offer, and that not only did I have something to offer, I also have places in my life where I can receive from other people if they're willing to give, where I can learn from other people. And that was just a beautiful segue into this poem that I wanted to share. But before I read it, I want to take Mr. Michael Orlando's initiative and just let anybody know if you're struggling right now, or if you feel like you're going to relapse, or like you're in a bad situation, just pick up the phone and call someone. My personal cell phone's available on HHR's website as well as on my personal business cards. Just if you feel like you're in a bad spot, call someone and talk before you make a decision. Just think. And with that, I wanted to segue quick into this poem called Divided We Fall. As I stumble through the darkness, a light shines in the distance. A light so bright that it might lead the way, a beacon for directing, so I won't go astray. Still, I pray. I pray for forgiveness, I pray for redemption, and I pray to bear witness. For this is a time in which we all should unite. Black, brown, or white, we're not colors, we're brothers. I believe in a future where we love one another. A future of strength, a future of hope, a future of love, a future of jokes. We need not be frightened by the heights we will climb, because now is the time to rise, to look towards the sky and shout, why? Why all the half-truths? Why all the lies? Our lives matter, so don't tell me they don't. Don't look me in the eyes and tell me you won't. Allow me to be free, as we're all meant to be, because I will be free, but not only me. It's all for one and one for all. Now rise up with me if you hear my call. Together, forever, once and for all. United we stand, divided we fall.
I love that. That was powerful.
And it's just, I just was using that as like a symbol of if we can unify in any type of way, if we can link ourselves with another person and gain help and then provide help, we could really initiate like a real change. Because the only way that we can do this is together, right? Because our mantra is what it is for a reason. When you recover together, you're more likely to recover forever.
Yep. And the more that web is whole and filled in, then that's the thing too. Your reco what you're facing or confronting in recovery won't look the same every day. So one, it's about a network, right? That we
Yeah.
can c connect in real time as our needs shift, as things shift,
It's not just our
and our
needs, though,
hope.
our abilities to give back. You're right.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
where were you going with that? Our hope?
Our hope, I think, for Helping Hands Recover is that recovery is that Facebook page can become kind of a thriving community. I would hope for people to feel comfortable to start to name their needs. I mean,
Absolutely.
I think it's so vulnerable to ask to name that you need help.
Exactly, that's
And
yes.
it's so vulnerable, but it doesn't it that's where if we can create a culture where asking for help is seen as part of being helpful, right? Again, it's forget this like one or the other. Either I need help and I'm pathetic, or I'm giving help and I'm a savior. That is a very toxic way of thinking about
Absolutely,
life.
absolutely.
It's a give and take all the time. And that's how the eco, that's literally, we are made of this earth. The earth's ecosystem does the same thing. A tree system in the woods, all of the root systems of those trees are connected to each other. Not just the same types of trees, even different types of trees. They're connected through underground, what's called mycelium, which is like fungus, mushroom, basically, underneath the wood forest. And what will happen is if one tree is getting hit by something that's like a bug, it will warn all the other trees.
Wow.
Or if another tree is thirsty because it hasn't been getting as much water, the other trees can send nutrients to it through the root system.
Wow. It's like
And
Avatar.
so, yeah, trees don't grow on their own. They grow as a unit and they're talking to each other
Wow.
about their collective needs all the time. So that's what I dream of for HHR, is that we become that network of communication
And I
and
think that's what
care.
we're gonna become. I really do. I think we're on the right path. I'm gonna read another poem quick, then we're gonna take a break for our second song, and then we're going to allow the Titan to paint a bigger picture.
Sounds good.
The man I used to be. I close my eyes and look back in time, and for a moment, it's like I'm there. Back when nothing mattered, the time before disaster, a life without a care. As the dream then fades, I still remain a slave to my current time and place. Yet still I press on from dusk until dawn with a smile glued onto my face. I know the road ahead is rough and full of dread, but I'll make it, and then you will see that now I am stronger and also no longer the man that I used to be. And with that, I'm going to transition on into a song by Eminem called Not Afraid, which I feel symbolizes how we should view asking for help. We shouldn't be afraid and view it as a weakness, because being able to ask for help is really an extremely strong attribute, characteristic, whatever you want to call it. And without further ado, here you are.
I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid. Take a stand.
It's been a ride.
Take a stand. Everybody.
I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me. I'll get you.
You can try and read my lyrics off of this paper before I lay them, but you will take the sting out these words before I say them. Cause ain't no way I'ma let you stop me from causing mayhem. When I say I'ma do something, I do it. I don't give a damn what you think. I'm doing this for me. So the world feed it beans. It's gassed up. Everything's a stopping me. I'ma be what I set out to be. Without a doubt, undoubtedly. And all those who look down on me, I'm tearing down your balcony. Knowing fans are bust, don't try to ask him why or how can he. From infinite down to the last relapse album, he still f***ing. Whether he's on salary, paid hourly, until he bows out or he just bows out of him. Whichever comes first, for better or worse. He's married to the game, like a f*** you for Christmas. His gift is a curse. Forget the earth, he's got the urge to pull his from the dirt and f*** the whole universe. Words and the rhythm for you to know it's a rap. You said you was king, you lied through your teeth. For that, your feelings. Instead of getting crowned, you're getting capped. And to the fans, I'll never let you down again. I'm back. I promise to never go back on that promise. In fact, let's be honest, at last relax. CD was there. Perhaps I ran them accents into the ground. Relax, I ain't going back to that now. All I'm trying to say is get back, click, clack, clap. Cause I ain't playing around. It's a game called circling, I don't know how. I'm way too up to back down. Trying to figure this crap out. Thought I had it mapped out, but I guess I didn't. This f***ing black cloud still follows me around, but it's time to exercise these demons. These motherfuckers are doing jumping jacks I'm now. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
get clean. I did it for me. Admittedly, I probably did it subliminally for you, so I could come back a brand new me. You helped see me through, and don't even realize what you did. Cause believe me, you. I've been through the ringer, but they can do little to the middle finger. I think I got a tear in my eye. I feel like the king of my world. Haters can make like bees with no stingers and drop dead. No more beef lingers, no more drama from now. I wanna promise to focus solely on handling my responsibilities as a father. So I solemnly swear to always treat this group like my daughters and raise it. You couldn't lift a single single on it. Cause the way I feel, I'm strong enough to go to the club or the corner pub and lift the whole liquor counter up. Cause I'm raising the bar. I shoot for the moon, but I'm too busy gazing at stars. I feel amazing and I'm not afraid.
Alrighty, and we are back again, and I just wanted to let you guys know one more time, Kinney's Cakes, Eleanor Kinney, if you need a cake made, she is the person to go to. It's a new business in Hudson. Her phone number is 518-653-8994. And now, after the Titan Phoebes paints a bigger picture for y'all, he's going to throw it back to me, and we're going to reread poems that I read in the guest appearance I did when I was introducing the show. But for now, I give you the Titan of Phoebes paints the bigger picture.
Hello, 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 Titan here, looking at the big picture from up top. Oof. All right, I got two things today that I want to connect us to in the bigger picture. One is, especially for our listeners who this is not maybe such a personal thing, I think it's helpful, and even for those who actually are in the struggle personally, I want to bring it up, as I do, to the reality of our society and what people are up against. So we have over 1.5 million people incarcerated just in state and federal prisons. That doesn't even include county jails in this country at any one time. It's probably closer to 2 million when you add in county jails. And 50% of those people have children under the age of 18, which means there are 2.7 million children in this country who have a parent behind bars, which impacts those children, impacts their parents, obviously, behind bars, and it impacts whoever else is there doing caretaking, which might be the other parent, or might be grandparents, or might be siblings, or cousins, or aunties. It depends. And I want to, right out of the gate, give a huge shout out to all of the family and loved ones and friends who do the incredibly hard advocacy and labor of caring for loved ones behind bars, of driving 5 hours to get to that prison in the middle of nowhere to visit with somebody, to deal with those painful short phone calls and to take the bill on the other side when it comes, who keep people on track, who send love letters, and to recognize that you're already doing so much work before that loved one comes home, and that it's sure going to be a lot of work when they come home too. And I want this conversation to honor the people in the struggle coming home as much as the people in the struggle on the other side of it. In terms of child custody, there are there of the people who go into prison, about 62% of those people, more than half by a long shot, are coming home with some sort of legal and financial debt. And child custody is a huge part of that. And I think when people see people coming home from prison struggling, I don't think they always recognize it's not just about paying the bills right in front of you. It's about dealing with that massive backlog of debt. And child custody can become a huge part of that, and child support. And no one's mad about children receiving support, but the system can be really, really kind of cruel, having somebody basically unable to work and then saying you owe money for all that time that you were unable to work towards child support. And the average of child support expenses is $15,000 to $30,000 in debt. So again, for anyone just like tuning in, just imagine coming home, starting from scratch, trying to make it in this world, and then having $20,000 of debt you have to confront.
On top of whatever else. Wow.
Yeah. So it's a massive problem, and it does cause a lot of people to actually – it's the direct cause for a lot of people to go back to jail. You know, a study was done in South Carolina that found that 15% of the people in county jails were sitting there for non-payment of child support. Huh. So it has a ton of impacts and tends – what's frustrating is that system tends to just impact negatively everybody. And one thing I want to let people know is that if you are struggling with this directly, that a lot of times it feels like you're just kind of stuck with what you've got. But there are – the federal government a few years ago made some reforms to try to encourage states to also make it less burdensome, whether that means having your child not accruing arrears while you're in jail, so not having back payments build up, or having that – having your status change to involuntarily unemployed, which then keeps you from racking up additional child support during your time incarcerated, and then other payment plans for when you come home. So really, legally, you have protections from getting locked up for not having child payment. But to our point earlier, if you don't have legal support and education and knowledge and advocacy around you, you may not know that. So another thing that HHR is here to do is to help folks who maybe have legal questions or need support navigating these things. If this is something directly impacting you or a loved one that you know, hit us up, because there are, you know, go through Facebook, Helping Hands Recovery, and we can try to connect you with some resources to deal with that. But I wanted to just give that big picture so that when you, again, compassion for each other, just the bigger picture of what everyone's grappling with. The second thing I want to talk about in terms of the bigger picture is that we get to build on a legacy of mutual aid and support. And one of the ways that I think we need to do that is kind of what I was saying earlier, is to break out of the sort of way we've been taught to think about support, which is me and my little insular family kind of take care of our own, and we do that, and everyone else is on their own, into something broader. And the way I want to bring this in is actually with somebody else's voice, which is the incredibly brilliant Huey P. Newton, who, for folks who don't know, is one of the original founders of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. And he wrote a book called Revolutionary Suicide, which was about how do we push ourselves to the absolute edge of a radical action to realize freedom, even if it means death, right? And revolutionary suicide is to say, I'm willing to risk my own life to be free, but I'm not going to sit back and just let this system crush me, right? That's the difference. And he has a chapter in this book on what is called loving. And in it, he's talking about his experience with relationships and with interpersonal relationships and with women he's dated. And I want to read kind of the conclusion of this chapter, because I think it could be really powerful for folks who feel a little bit stunted in the just, you know, I'm going to read it and then we'll talk about it. I want to hear your thoughts about it, Lip. So he says, my experience with my in this case, ex-girlfriend reinforced my conviction that the demands that two people make upon each other can be crippling and destructive. No matter how much they love each other, the values of our society conspire to add intolerable pressures to a binding relationship. The contradictions inherent in marriage make it all but impossible to survive. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who are probably nodding their heads right now. And he's speaking about a woman he loves deeply, and I just want to name that. These contradictions have been solved by the values of the Black Panther Party and by the party's communal life. So this is what we're talking about, communal power. The closeness of the group and the shared sense of purpose transforms us into a harmonious, functioning body working for the destruction of the conditions that make people suffer. Huh. Our unity has transformed us to the point where we have not compromised with the system. We have the closeness and love of family life, and the will to live in spite of cruel conditions. Consciousness is the first step toward control of a situation. We feel free as a group. We know what troubles us and we act. And then he goes on to say, bourgeois values, kind of standard values, upper class values, define the family situation in America. Give it, define the family situation in America and give it certain goals. Oppressed and poor people who try to reach these goals fail because of the very conditions that the bourgeoisie, the people in power, have established. There is the dilemma. We need a family because every man and woman deserves the kind of spiritual support and unity a family provides. Black people to try to reach the goals set by the dominant culture and fail without knowing why. And I think that's true for lots of people. So he asks this at the conclusion, how do you solve the situation? And he says, by staying outside the system and living alone? No, I found that to be an outsider is to be an alienated and unhappy life. In the party, the Black Panther Party, we have formed a family, a fighting family that is a vital unit in itself. We have no romantic or fictional notions about getting married and living happily ever after behind a white picket fence. We choose to live together for a common purpose, and together we fight for our existence and our goals. Today, we have the closeness, the harmony, and the freedom that we sought for so long.
Hmm. Wow.
So that's, yeah, yeah. What you thought?
That was super. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Just even with the very beginning of it, the demands that two people place on each other, even when they love each other so much, can cause any relationship to become crippling and toxic. And just the unity that he speaks of, that's exactly what I envisioned for HHR. That was a beautiful reading, Mr. Titan. I just wanted to let you know that I was sitting there. I could not have been more absorbed into that. After the show, you should send me that book. Send me where I could find that book, because I'd like to read it now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would encourage anyone who can get their hands on it to read it, because it's as brilliant as what I just read through the whole book. But I just thought it was so unique to
it's
have,
empowering.
You know, a political activist bringing it back to the fundamental structure of family.
Yeah.
And community. And I think that is why the Black Panther Party was so effective and also such a threat to the system, because it was is undermining just the deeper rootedness of where toxicity shows up. And I think it's so liberating. I think a lot of people lean on their romantic relationships in really understandable ways, but really difficult ways for the person on the other end or for themselves to sustain. It can be draining. And instead to say, I love this person and we are part of a larger community and collective that we can reach out and get our needs met, you know, to put aside jealousy and petty control and petty that's my person, liberates everybody involved to become part of this, you know, as Martin Luther King would say, beloved community.
It sounds like a sort of separatism that is ultimately causing unity, and that's just, it's a beautiful concept.
Mm-hmm. Separatism from the traditional values society tells us are gonna save us,
but
trusting something different,
still getting what we crave as human beings, and that's the closeness of family. That was such a beautiful quote, Phoebe. It really was.
Yeah, well, shout out to Huey Newton, to the Black Panther Party, and those who continue to learn and carry those traditions on.
And
it's
again,
so relevant today as it was, you know, 70 years, you know, 50 years ago. Goodness.
Again, real quick, before Mr. Phoebs continues, if anybody is struggling right now, if they need help with any problem or they're going to relapse or anything, especially after hearing what was just read, please reach out. Call someone, because there's no need for you to feel alone, because we are a family, and we're going to make a change in the world, just like the author of that book did. All right, Phoebs. Did you have any other shout outs that you wanted to make this week?
I do. Look at you. We're on today.
I'm reading your mind.
Shout out that I want to close out with, which, goes out, actually, it's kind of broad, but there are these wonderful things in the world called free marts that are community-led organizations that create stores that are all donated goods, and then everything in the store is donation-based. And so there's one up in Hunter, New York, called the Phoenix Web, if anybody wants to go check that out. Again, I mean, everything from food to shoes to art supplies to electronics to dishes, who knows what,
and it's just
on any given
donations.
day, you might find. And there's another one that just opened in Philmont, actually.
Really?
And I don't know exactly where that is, but I'm sure if you search Philmont Free Mart in Facebook, you'll be able to find them. And what a fantastic resource. And it's that culture of taking things that would otherwise go to waste and putting them and making them available to people also undermines capitalism, because it's, you know, reusing things instead of always buying new things on our own, right? Which is what capitalism loves. And it's they're great spaces because they're shame free. It's not like you have to go out and say, oh, I can't afford this, and fill out some form and be stigmatized about it. Everybody who walks in is welcome to walk out and
wow.
pay what they can. Whether that's 50 cents or nothing that day,
that
or maybe
beautiful.
The next time you come through, you have $5 on you differently. And that's what keeps it going.
I'm going to find this one in Philmont, and I'm going to give them our card, and I'm specifically going to let them know about this shout out, because that is a wonderful resource. Wow. People need to
and
know
anyone
more about
can
that.
Do it. You know what I mean? Like, you can even organize it in your own little neighborhood, right?
Yeah,
you can
yeah.
You know, you can say, hey y'all, why don't we just put up a pop-up stand and tables, and anytime you're cleaning out your garage and you find some stuff you don't need anymore, put it out there, and maybe your neighbor just saved $50 that they really couldn't afford to put out on a tool they
on
needed.
Something you were gonna throw away.
Exactly, that's mutual aid in action. So that wraps up my segment and my shout outs, and I'll kick it back to you, Lip. Take us home.
All right. Well, I've got two poems that are extremely powerful that our broader listener base might not have been able to hear, because I read them for the first time when I was a guest on another show that Phoebes is the tech god of. So with that, I'm going to read the first one. It's called "Do I Inspire You?" And afterwards, I'd like to for each poem, I'd like to take a few minutes to hear what Phoebes has to say about them and how he interprets them as a person listening to the poem. And like a constructive criticism sort of thing. You know what I mean, Phoebes? I wanna hear what you think about what I've written.
All right.
Does that sound like a good idea to you?
Sounds great.
All right. Do I inspire you? Do I inspire you? Because you inspire me. And what inspires me? It's to be inspiring, to be a light inside the dark, a light in which I bring a song to lips of broken souls, a song for all to sing. Now and then I come to think that my day soon will come when I strive to reach my goals. I never walk, I run. I fight against all odds until my work is finally done. I've never met an obstacle I could not overcome. And to this day I try to be the very best I can. I come to meet adversity with well-made battle plans. And these confines I've constructed, I built with my own hands, as I did my destiny. Alas, I'm just a man. Though I never fail, I falter, and find I aim to be a man with goals accomplished, a man with dreams achieved. These drugs have been my downfall, yet they also set me free, because now I can express myself through rhymes and poetry. Do I inspire you? Because you inspire me, and what inspires me is to be inspiring.
So good to hear that poem again. I love that poem. I don't have a lot of criticism. I think it's a beautifully, beautifully constructed poem, and it just gets to the heart of it. I think what resonates for me and really stands out, just that opening and closing, do I inspire you because you inspire me? What a beautiful opening to just, without even knowing who's reading it, to trust that there is something in them that would inspire you.
Yeah.
Right? You're offering that sort of trust and faith that every person has something in them that will inspire somebody else. And you know, remember that you never really know what about you might inspire somebody.
Exactly.
Or might be just what they need. So to lean into who you are and what's authentic. But to feed this idea, to move through the world looking for what might inspire you in another person.
Or what
also
in
opens
you could
you up
inspire to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. And it's that mutuality again. It's to say, you know, a big part, I have a little card that I have hanging up above my desk that says community care starts with self-care.
Wow.
And what that means is, like, for me to show up well for you, I need to do my part to take care of myself. So if I don't believe that I have anything inspiring in me, I'm probably going to have a hard time actually finding that in you or letting you find that in me.
Wow.
And so I do think there's something, you know, in you saying, you speak to the mutuality of leaning into self-love in this poem while also opening up the door for other people to feel loved. And so there's that give and take that happens. But yeah, self-care is the foundation upon which the community can care for each other well. Because it's not other people's jobs to keep you well if you're not part of the equation. Right? It's going to fall apart if you're not the central part of your own wellness plan.
I love the breakdown.
Speak to that in the poem too, right? Like your poetry, you speak to your creative writing, you speak to that, the how you're doing that for yourself. And then the last thing that stood out to me that I thought was so powerful is the line where you talk about how both the confines of your life and your destiny in life are things that have been built by your own hands.
Yes.
Which again speaks to self-awareness, self-consciousness, self-accountability, and ultimately self-care, that you could recognize with my own hands, I have built the confines that are around me, and these same hands are just as capable to build a destiny of freedom around me.
I love the insight. I really do.
Same hands. So trust your hands, everybody.
I've got one more for you, and you could feel free to comment however you'd like at the end again. I love the insight and the breakdown. It really is beautiful. It's the reason why I write, so people can interpret it and try to feel something from it. This one's called Immortalized. The world's a crazy place, you know. It's filled with so much spit. But sometimes I just can't control the need to nurture it. Because everything just lives to die while we all just die to live. That's why I cannot fathom why it matters if we sin. I've got a tale to tell of mine, a tale that which begins. A heart that's broken from the start, a bell that never rings. He fell apart not long ago, and one day finally broke. His heart then slowly turned to stone, despairing as he choked. So is it so surprising that he finally turned to drugs? Tell me, what did you expect? They took the one he loved. As all his world began to fall and crumble to the ground, he tried to call and ask for help, but no one could be found. And all the words that he once spoke seemed not to make a sound. Lost, he couldn't find his way, any way but down. All the while he tumbled, he never lost his love for the world and those he cared, the ones he left above. He crept along the bowels of the earth and of his soul. Eternity had come to pass as he lost all control. He yearned so badly for the life that he had left behind. But can you really fix yourself while trapped inside your mind? Some things you just can't replace, like family and time. But now they're all immortalized here inside my mind.
Hmm. It speaks back to what we were talking about earlier about hope, needing to find a way to release that which we can't replace, and trust that in that healing process we're opening our energy up to receiving those gifts in a new way. But to your point, by immortalizing those experiences, you know, to let them. To me, it's about, again, taking what's been hard and then letting it carry you and actually be the fuel and the force that brings you to the next stage.
You couldn't have hit the nail more directly on the head with any other statement.
I mean, your poems speak so clearly. They're really, really powerfully written. And the other thing that I just love about this poem, it just speaks to you, Lip, is that no matter what you've been through and gone through, that you can't help but love the world and the people around you. And to see as much suffering and to see as much, you know, spit as you've seen, to still carry that sort of just desire to see the world around you be well and to thrive is a beautiful thing. So thank you for being that kind of force in the world.
Thank you for acknowledging it. All right, guys, we're getting to the end here. So I just wanted to let everybody know. I wanted to remind everybody, actually, that none of you are alone. I stand with you every second of the day, and I believe in you even if you don't believe in yourself. I love you even if you don't love yourself, and you can do this. You can get better if you want to. Because really, if we all recover together, we're way more likely to recover forever. And with that, I'm going to close the show out with our final song of the day, All the Stars by Kendrick Lamar. Thank you. Guys, that was Recover Together. Thank you all for listening again. That's the end of our show for today. And remember, when we recover together, we're way more likely to recover forever. We'll catch y'all next week with our full team. See you then.